At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson, here with Ron Hicks, and we've got a smorgasbord of topics to talk about. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. It's always great to have these conversations with you.
Yeah. Have you heard about the carjackings in Louisville?
You were telling me about that. A lot of violence taking place. People started out as First Amendment rights. The free speech has turned it into violence and crimes against humanity. And
yeah. U.S. Attorney Russell Coleman made a statement about all the carjackings. It's becoming very common there. And Russell Coleman is in charge of the FBI division up there and said this: put Louisville families at risk through carjacking, then be prepared to go to federal prison. We will respond to this increasing threat to neighborhoods across our city and pledge closer collaboration with our state and local partners to reverse the disturbing trend.
He went on
to explain that carjacking is a federal crime punishable by up to $250,000 fine and imprisonment of up to 15 years. And he's coming down strong against that kind of
activity.
Yes,
he should. It's criminal activity. Yeah,
it is. And you know, the effort is to restore law and order in Louisville. Because it's, quite frankly, there's disorder, there's lawlessness. A friend of mine up there and I were on the phone a couple weeks ago, and I asked him, tell me what's going on in Louisville. He got his iPhone out and went downtown and recorded about a 20-second video just going by business after business. And Ron, they were boarded up. They were closed. It looked like a hurricane area. And that's what I told him. I said, this looks like a pre-hurricane zone. Mm-hmm, he said, yeah, it is. People are afraid. They're shutting down their businesses. They're trying to protect their property because of the lawlessness, the mob violence up there.
That's crazy.
So we can't relate to it here. We're recording in far west Kentucky. We've not had that problem here, but Louisville is.
Well, there's been protests, but they've been very civil, and there's been great discourse that's happened during them, and that sort of a thing. So we haven't experienced any of the violence and that sort of stuff down here.
How can the church respond to that kind of violence when you live in a community that the tensions are so high that people are resorting to mob mentality? They're turning violent. They're looting businesses. They're throwing bricks through windows. They're going onto the front doorsteps of people's homes and saying, hey, we want you to move out so we can move in. Actually, we're seeing that kind of thing happen. What should be the Christian response to that? As a pastor, let me take a step back.
Sure.
Have you spoke about this from your pulpit at Henderson Memorial?
About racial injustices or?
Well, just how to respond to the moment that we're in.
Well, in a general sense, as opposed to a specific sense, one of the messages that we say repeatedly is, you know, the scriptures tell us to consider others better than yourself. You know, Book of James says, if you have faith and you have works, what good is your faith? Jesus said, feed the hungry, greet the stranger, clothe the naked, visit those that are sick and those that are in prison. So that those are things that we're constantly putting before people. I was just reading a Time magazine article yesterday, though, and it was from a young black lady who encountered a situation as she was walking down the street. A lady was washing her car in an upscale neighborhood. Both of them lived in that neighborhood. The lady who was walking and who was writing the article was self-identified as African-American. And she said she asked the lady who was watching her car so that she didn't have to step into the street. She asked the lady, could you step back just a little bit to maintain the social distancing? Because I guess walking outside, neither one was wearing a mask. And she said the lady, you know, huffed and puffed and stepped back. Well, the lady walking thought that the only reason that she acted that way is because the lady was black. And so she said, you know, these sort of racial things. And so she's supposing, without ever asking the lady at all about that, she's supposing it all had to do with the color of her skin. And she actually, in the title of the article is why white people ought to try twice as hard in their relations with people of color, mm-hmm. because for so long people of color have had to be twice, again, her words, twice as good, twice as smart, twice as this. And so it's time now for people who are Caucasian to have to suffer being twice as nice, twice as that. You know, my mom always taught me two wrongs never made a right.
Right.
And so one, automatically assuming that somebody, you know, if you're washing your car and someone asks you to step back, you know, you're kind of in a groove and she huffed. It may have simply been because of the inconvenience of having to stop what she was doing to step back. But automatically, this lady identified her as a racist.
There's two things that come to mind. One is there's a lesson there in that you should not assume the worst in another person.
Right.
Give them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
Don't impute motives on somebody
Absolutely.
Else. Stay away from that.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, too, is it doesn't hurt to make that extra effort, I would say, to try to understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to be mindful of before you say something, how will this be received?
Absolutely.
Consider the moment that we're in. It's a very unusual moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People are afraid of the pandemic. They're afraid of getting COVID. People are offended when you wear masks in public. I don't understand all that, but that's the reality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we need to be mindful of the moment. We need to take an extra step to understand how somebody might be thinking through something. And then be cautious as to how what you're going to say. What are you saying, and how might that be received?
Well, because she was presenting everything as being factual, that it was factual that the woman was racist. It was factual that she acted that way because of the color of her skin and all the rest of that. Even though there was no indicator.
So you're saying the journalist
was
saying this?
The journalist
was
saying
that. And that's a problem right there.
Right.
And assuming the worst.
Absolutely.
And then creating a story that could have had nothing to do with the reality of that situation.
Right. And that's why I brought that up. We say to a church all the time, get to know somebody's story. Get to know them as a person. You know, I practice personal evangelism. And let me hear your story. How can I help you? How can I minister to you? And, you know, James even says, if you say to somebody's hungry, you know, hey, go and have a, you know, be well fed, but you don't do anything to feed them, you know, then you're not ministering. No. So get to know who they are, find out what their needs are, and in ministering to their needs, then you quote unquote earn the right to share the gospel.
Yeah.
So those are things that we talk about to the church all the time. If a guy's laying in the gutter and he's drunk, we can say, well, he deserves to be in the gutter because he's a drunk. Or we can say there's a human being in the gutter.
Right.
And so we try to look at everybody as created in God's image. So that's the message we preach here. Long answer to a short question.
No, that's a good message. And I want to challenge you to continue to talk about how we respond as believers, as followers of Jesus. How do we respond to a culture that seems to be in meltdown
mm-hmm,
mode?
Mm-hmm.
So much anger, so much bitterness, and it's turning into violence in our streets. And the church must find its voice. The church must say something productive. And it must not just say something, but must roll up its sleeves to engage. The church is
mm-hmm.
called to influence culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's called to be a city set on a hill. Followers of Jesus are told that they're salt, which is a preserving agent. They're told that they're light, which lets you see where you're going when there's darkness. And if the church is ever to have an impact, to find its place in its community, it must do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
It must do something right now because it's urgent. The culture needs a church,
mm-hmm.
even though the culture might not agree with it. The culture in our society needs the church.
Absolutely,
Ron, we are in a challenging time with this COVID-19, with the fear that's out there. A lot of people have died. There are a number of people in the hospital. And we're seeing some of the secondary effects from the government shutdown and from the fear that's out there. One of these effects was revealed by the Centers for Disease Control. They just released a survey recently that said that one out of every four young adults between the ages of 18 to 24 have considered suicide in the past month. Huge number. And this is related to these young adults being kept apart from their peers. They're no longer in school. They're no longer able to meet with their friends in other places, and they're considering suicide as a viable alternative. The same Centers for Disease Control study found that 40% of those surveyed, and it was over 5,000 people, I believe, young adults surveyed across the country, more than 40% said that they experienced mental or behavioral health issues related to government shutdowns over coronavirus. 13.3% of those surveyed admitted to abusing drugs and alcohol to cope with the stress. So, Ron, we're seeing this particular age group really suffering from this physical distancing. Mm-hmm. You can't get with other people. You can't meet in an actual classroom to have to go to school. You can't be at a large gathering, and you're seeing mental health breakdown with that age group.
This isn't anything new. Back in the olden days, they called this cabin fever.
Yeah.
You know, you're somewhere and you can't get out during the wintertime and all the rest of that, and you don't have any interaction.
Let me speak firsthand about that because people...
Snow is the old national bird.
Yeah. Down here, you know, if you're below, you know, southern Illinois, really, you don't really know what cabin fever is until you've been up in the northern climate where the day length is significantly shorter. Sure. The average temperature is much colder. You have snow on the ground for 5 months out of the year. Cabin fever is real.
Absolutely.
You're ready for spring to come, and you're ready to get out there and have warmer weather.
Open the windows and spring tonics and all that was literally, you know, some of the older folks still talk about spring tonics because you're cooped up in a cabin with the germs and all you had was what you put up for the winter and all the rest of that. You know, I think there's a cure to all that, and we may have to talk about it after the break, but I think there's a cure for cabin fever.
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky. Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Ron Hicks. And Ron, just before the break, we were talking about cabin fever. What does this have to do with the Centers for Disease Control survey that found that one out of four young people between the ages of 18 to 24 have considered suicide in the past month?
Well, because
is that a little crass? I mean, to talk about cabin fever in the same context?
Not at all, because it's a very real thing. And that's what, and I want folks to realize this has been around for a long, long time. But as population grows and as our connectivity grows through social media and all the rest of that, people experience cabin fever quicker, you know, more suddenly and more abruptly than you know, from the time period when that phrase was originated. So what young people are going through right now is very real.
Yeah.
We've been created by God to be in relationship first with Him and then with others.
That's right. Now, let me jump in.
Yeah.
When I had cabin fever, and I've experienced it, even though I found outdoor activities up north, I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, very cold, very long winters. We would ski, we would ice skate. Ice fishing was my big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Loved to ice fish.
Mm-hmm.
But cabin fever was real.
Sure.
And I was really ready. Come about February, I was ready for spring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Spring really didn't come till April up there.
Right.
Because you had another month. March is winter up there.
Mm-hmm.
But when we experienced cabin fever, suicide did not cross our minds.
Mm-hmm.
At least it didn't cross mine. Now, it did affect a certain number of people.
Mm-hmm.
But here with the Centers for Disease Control, they're saying one out of four young people between 18 to 24 have considered suicide.
And
isn't that extreme?
No, I don't think so. If you talk to any religious organization, that's the segment of the population missing from church. So their identity, and I'm painting with a very broad brush. So if you fall in this category and this doesn't represent you, I realize I'm painting with a broad brush, but their identity is who they are with their friends. They care more about what their friends think about them than honestly what they think about themselves. They care far more about the number of likes that they get on a post, how many friends they have on Instagram, or I don't even know if that's the right term, on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, how many people retweet their tweets and all the rest of that. So
wait, my value isn't in how many people retweet my postings on Facebook
right.
or on Twitter.
Right. Right.
And how many friends I have, and right. my value doesn't depend on that.
Right. But there's some people that do. Yeah. Honestly, right. they do. And yeah. Richard's just saying that because nobody retweets.
So that's virtual reality. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I'm teasing.
But you know, it's a virtual support system.
Absolutely.
Because you know what? It really doesn't matter how many friends you have on Facebook. Matters how many true friends you have. And it doesn't matter if anonymous people like something you post. And this is important for me to emphasize, because we can get sucked into this virtual world that my value depends on what the general public thinks of me. How many Facebook friends do I have? Are they liking my posts? That really doesn't matter in the big scheme of things. And for our emotional health, we need to realize that. Young people need to hear that. They need real friends. They need somebody that they can have a real conversation with and do life in a real way. Because it's that virtual stuff, even though it's a tool that can be used and it can be kind of fun to scroll through that, don't get sucked into it, because that is not real life.
Mm-hmm. I just in this last week, I had conversations with two people that fell into that age range that you're talking about, and they were having a very difficult time because of how others perceive them. And everybody wants to be liked and all the rest of that, but Richard, you and I have talked many times, my identity is I'm a child of the King. You hear me?
Okay, Ron, I want to go back to this. Yeah. This age group of 18 to 24, you said that they are not plugged into church. Mm-mm. I want to ask you this hard and pointed question.
Yeah.
Why should they care about church? Why would they want church? And here's the prevailing view.
Mm-hmm.
Church is for old people. Church is for families. Church is for do-gooders. You know, I can pray on my own. I can maybe listen to a sermon here or there. What does church have to do with me? I'm 18. I'm 20 years old. I've got my life in front of me. That's a stifling. The perception is church is stifling. Doesn't have anything to speak to me, to say to my life. Why should an 18 to 24-year-old be concerned about church or even want to be part of a church?
That's a great question. Often loving grandmothers, grandfathers, I want you to have a relationship with Jesus. So when I die, I'll see you one day in heaven. And those are realities. Yeah. So they get from their grandparents, if you go to church, you're a good, respectable person. Yeah. And I get that, because that was kind of a generational thing.
Well, let me jump in if I could say something. Mm-hmm. We live in the Bible Belt, where that is part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be a good, respectable, good member of the community, you need to be part of church.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And you had to be a part of certain churches. And it's not about those cliques, and it's not about we know that. But the reality is young people in that category want something that's real. They just want somebody to tell them the truth.
Yeah.
And they don't get that outside of the church. Christians who come to the church, we don't carry the message outside the church. So the young people are like, okay, I see this person going to church every single Sunday. They say it's a very important thing to them, yet they've never spoken to me at all other than say, would you come to church? I think one of the greatest disservices that the church has bought into is inviting people to Sunday school and church. Is that wrong? No. But they've substituted inviting people to Jesus for inviting them to Sunday school and church.
So what does Jesus have to do with the 18 to 24-year-old's life, other than being moral? Jesus was a good moral teacher, a good man. How does Jesus relate to them today? An 18 to 24-year-old American kid.
Well, the scriptures say there's no way to the Father except through the Son. There's no way for us to be reconciled to God the Father unless we have a relationship with Jesus. And here's the greatest thing. He took care of it all. You know, I say to young people all the time, if you went to a fancy restaurant, called in advance, had reservations, you got a pocket full of money, you show up with your pretty lady or your handsome gentleman on your arm, and you're not wearing a jacket and a tie, the maitre d' will stop you. I'm sorry, you can't come in, but I have a reservation. Here's some money. Yeah, we have a dress code here. But the very person who stops them will say, if you need a jacket and a tie, I can get you one.
I'm going to push against this a little bit.
All right, go ahead.
Again,
yeah.
The
yeah.
18 to 24-year-old in this country saying, I don't want to even be at that restaurant.
Sure.
I'm good with my life right now. The church is stifling.
Mm-hmm.
The church is judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
The church doesn't offer me. I've got a career in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have my own life.
Yeah.
Church doesn't speak to me.
And a lot of people are saying that. But the people in that demographic are looking for truth.
Yeah.
They're looking for it.
Okay, so it's truth. So yeah, the church truth. Can speak to truth.
Absolutely.
About and, what? Just yeah. spiritual things?
No, life. I mean, the Bible, I would challenge anybody to give me a topic that the Bible doesn't speak on. And, you know, I realize
career.
Sometimes we...
Career and calling. I'm going to put this out there.
Okay. Whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it as unto the Lord.
Okay.
All right. Okay. That's career. So you can glorify God in your career choice. Martin Luther King Jr. said something. I'm going to butcher this. I'm going to hit this quote, but he said, "If your lot in life is to be a street sweeper, let all heaven and earth rejoice that you were the greatest street sweeper that there ever was."
Yeah.
And if you do it unto the Lord, then people are going to notice. Look at how proficient they're doing with it.
I want to come back to this thought about what it means to be a follower of Jesus, and especially for that age group. And there's an entire generation missing from church, that 18 to 24, and really the 24 through the mid-30s.
Yeah.
It's not until people are having families that they're coming back to church. But I want to talk about what does church have to say to the young people in our culture, and why should they be involved? All right. You're tuning in just now, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that America is being torn apart. We're seeing injustice, violence, and destruction of property in some of our big cities. Historical statues of our founding fathers have been vandalized, and some are even pushing to defund the police. This has brought fear and discouragement to many. But now is not the time to pull back or to disengage. That's why we are launching Faith Wins Kentucky. Faith Wins Kentucky is dedicated to educating, activating, and mobilizing Christians to vote biblical values in the November election. We believe that America is a special nation whose institutions are undergirded by biblical values. We're blessed with freedoms and liberties beyond compare. But if we care about our freedoms, then we must be willing to protect them. To learn more about Faith Wins Kentucky and how you can make a difference this election, go to faithwinsky.org. That's faithwinsky.org.
Welcome back to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Ron Hicks. And just before the break, we were talking about young people who've dropped out of church and why church is important or should be important to them. What does church have to say to a young person? Ron, you were quoting from Martin Luther King Jr. about, you know, if somebody's a street sweeper, and I'm going to butcher this quote even more than you did before, but if somebody's a street sweeper, he should be the best street sweeper in the world. Do it to
heaven
the glory
should
of
rejoice.
God.
Yeah, heaven should rejoice at the way you do your job.
But young people have dropped out of church because they see it as something for old people, something that's not relevant to them, something that might be stifling and judgmental. And the where I want to go with this is that, and I am speaking from my experience.
Sure, sure.
I grew up in church, a charismatic church, very lively worship, very dynamic preaching. There was a lot of guilt that was
very
preached.
Very oppressive, though. All right.
There were some oppressive things, but one thing that I did not get by going to church every Sunday, and my family went to church every Sunday. We prayed around the dinner table. We were Bible-believing Christians. What I did not get was application to my life.
Yeah.
What does Scripture have to say about my life, about my calling? It was really when I went to college that I walked away from the faith. I didn't see Scripture applying to the calling. I was studying wildlife management biology. Loved that field. Well, I was getting taught an evolutionary perspective. I didn't believe in evolution, even as I was being taught it. But I had nothing to bring to the conversation. I could not defend a creationist account of the reality of the world.
And often when we talk about church, for folks your age, my age, and older, we often think, we know it's the congregation, but we also think of the building. Do you go to church? And so this particular building. And so often for people 18 to 25, they don't necessarily feel like they've got to come to a building to encounter truth. But their reality is this building is filled with people who profess to know the truth.
Yeah.
So why aren't they sharing that with me where I hang out?
I think that's part of it. Yeah, we need to live out the truth, right? You share the truth where you go. But also, I think in the church today, my observation, and I've got a lot of pastor friends across the state, spoken in literally hundreds of churches across Kentucky over the years, I think what we're failing is to offer a kingdom vision. Jesus came to preach, not escape from the world.
No,
He didn't just say, believe in me, and then I'm going to ferry you off to heaven.
Right.
No. He preached the kingdom. He preached a different way of doing life.
Be in the world, but not of the world.
Absolutely.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But a kingdom vision of how to do life, mm-hmm. of having a different goal in life, a different trajectory in life. His kingdom is not of this world, but he taught us to live according to his kingdom principles.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron, I'm going to pivot to something else here in the last few minutes mm-hmm. that we have to talk here about churches that are told to shut down in California in particular,
oh, yeah.
other states,
mm-hmm.
they have been told they cannot meet because it's too great a threat to spread COVID, yet at the same time, big box stores are open.
Mm-hmm. Liquor stores, abortion clinics.
Yes,
yeah, uh-huh.
absolutely. And several churches in California are pushing against Governor Gavin Newsom's orders to shut down churches. John MacArthur, a well-known evangelical pastor, mm-hmm. has said, you know what, we're going to have church.
Right.
MacArthur said this, Christ, not Caesar, is the head of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been following social distancing guidelines. They have not met for several months, but finally, after observing where the culture is, after observing that other stores have been allowed to be open, MacArthur said, we will open. We're going to try to be good citizens. We're going to practice social distancing within the church. We're going to put on face masks. And they actually sued the state, and fortunately, they won.
Mm-hmm. They were facing threats of having their utilities cut off, $1,000 a day fines, those sort of things. And, you know, we tell our congregation we want to be good citizens. We want to be able to set the example. Because you wear a mask does not mean that you live in fear. Government mandate is to wear your seatbelt. Everybody comes to church with the seatbelt on, and then they yeah. decide, I'm not going to participate in the government mandate wearing a yeah. mask. Right. You know, I don't get that.
No, but, that's right. So I was in Frankfurt a couple Sundays ago. I had to work over the weekend, and I visited Buck Run Baptist Church,
yeah,
one
yeah.
of the largest churches
oh,
up
yeah.
there, Hershey York,
pastor. Yeah. Phenomenal speaker.
And yeah, he's a godly man, mm-hmm. good man. And I observed just coming up to the front door, they had two people there greeting people. They both had masks on.
Mm-hmm. Probably holding the door open for you.
Holding the door open so you didn't have to touch the door. If you did not have a mask, they had a box there with mm-hmm. masks. They were handing them out. You would get a mask. Once you went into the foyer, they'd have somebody that would escort you to a pew mm-hmm. to walk, mm-hmm. to sit in,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that you were at least 6 feet apart from other
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
When they dismissed the service, they started dismissing from the
back right.
out, and
mm-hmm.
they kept people 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
Ron, I say all this because this was the best example of physical distancing I've seen anywhere. Hands down, they were better than Walmart
yeah.
or Lowe's or Home Depot, any of these other big box stores. It was amazing. It was the church that was practicing this social distancing out of concern for their members. Better than anyone else. And I think the same is going to happen with John MacArthur
yeah, yeah.
and with these other churches. Hey, I wish we could talk a little bit more
yeah.
about this. We are out of time. Brother, it's been good to do this
Amen.
Program
and
with
listen,
you.
Listen, listeners, just go and be the church.
God bless. Have a good day.